Welcome to CERT's podcast series, Security for Business Leaders. The CERT program is part of the Software Engineering Institute, a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You can find out more about us at CERT.org. Show notes for today's conversation are available at the podcast website. My name is Julia Allen. I'm a senior researcher at CERT, working on security governance and executive outreach. Today, I'm pleased to introduce Nick Iannelli, a member of the CERT Coordination Center. Today, Nick and I will be discussing a growing threat that is reportedly more damaging than viruses, worms, and other forms of malicious software, and what business leaders can do to address it. So welcome, Nick. Glad to have you here today.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys as well as talk with everybody else out there.
Great. Well, so let's talk about botnets, which I understand is short for robot networks. Could you tell our listeners what these are and why they're on the rise?
Sure. Well, a botnet is made up of compromised hosts, which are commonly referred to as bots or zombies or, you know, whatever moniker you want to give to these things. But the real point is it's a bunch of compromised hosts centrally managed or managed, you know, from multiple points, but they're logging into a location that's, you know, easily manageable. It's hard to say, you know, with absolute certainty why these things are you know, ongoing and rising. The simple fact is the code is out there. It's very easy to use. And if anybody has any questions, there's a free support staff. You can find them anywhere to assist in trying to get these things to run, operate, or exploit vulnerable machines.
Okay, so when you say compromised hosts and you talk about the code, what that means to me is basically someone's taken a piece of software, one of these bot software packages, and actually installed them on a whole bunch of computers. Do I have that right?
Yes.
And then have an ability to control that in some fashion upon request.
Probably the most popular command and control method that's being used is what's commonly referred to as IRC, Internet Relay Chat. It's a text-based chatting program that's been around for years and years and years and years. And what they do is they have them log into these IRC servers, go into specific channels, and you can see all of the users within that channel. By issuing a command in that channel, all of the compromised hosts that are there will respond and do the action requested of it by the person, you know, issuing the command.
So is that one of the things that makes botnets so dangerous, this command and control structure, and why attackers find them so appealing?
Yes, it's very easy to have them log into a central location, issue one command, and if you have a botnet of 1,000 compromised hosts, have them all do the same exact thing at the same exact time.
So how would an attacker find a compromised host to install one of these bot packages on?
Well, they could buy compromised hosts from other attackers. There's the what's commonly referred to as the underground economy, where they have just a smorgasbord of items for sale: compromised hosts, stolen accounts, malware, botnet source code. I mean, you name it, they have it for sale. So there's the opportunity to purchase the stuff. Some of these guys even start with infecting their own machine or infecting a friend's machine and then get that particular machine to start scanning the network for other vulnerable hosts. And once they have one, they just, you know, keep trying to look for other ones. And then once those get compromised, they're instructed to look for other ones. And it's just an ongoing, repeatable process for them to you know, gain more hosts for their botnet.
So it sounds like there's a fair amount of information sharing that goes on within the intruder community about this particular, I mean, obviously about many topics, but this topic in particular. Is that correct?
Oh, heck yeah, it's amazing. These guys have no qualms about sharing information, you know, with other people, you know, whether they're direct competitors or they're newbies or they're just, you know, your senior guys are out there. If somebody knows the answer to the question, or if multiple people know the answer to a question that's being asked, they don't hesitate to assist, provide information, to provide pointers, to even provide code to do what the person's asking to do.
That's remarkable. Well, without disclosing specific cases, could you describe some of the impacts of a successful botnet attack?
Sure. One of the probably the biggest impact is data theft or data exfiltration. You know, once a botnet gets on your machine or compromises your machine, whatever you as the user has access to, or whatever that system has access to, that malicious code how has access to. And these guys that are running these botnets understand that. So they've built in features that permit them to access all of the resources on that system. They put in keyloggers. They look for specific files. They'll look for, you know, doc extensions, spreadsheet XLS extensions. And then what they'll do is once they find this information, they'll upload it to a location, or they'll steal that information and send it to a central site where then they could go and parse through it and decide what they want to do with the information. They could use it themselves.
So pretty much anything that I would be doing on my laptop, be it at home or in the office, if there is a botnet installed on my computer, they can see or access everything I'm doing.
That is correct. And whatever you have access to, so if you have access to network shares where other people store their back up their files, that particular piece of malicious code has the capability to potentially access that network share and have access to all those other files. For all of your mail contacts, your address book, botnet malware has the ability to capture all of that. In addition, they have the ability to send email from your machine as you to the people that are in your contact address book.
Boy, some pretty scary thoughts here, wouldn't you say?
I'll say.
So why is the infiltration of botnet agents on our computers so hard to control? It seems to me that couldn't firewalls or antivirus or intrusion detection system be used to find these agents on our computers and eradicate them?
In most cases, I would say yes. As long as everything is properly configured and everything is, you know, patched, secured, hardened, and up to date. But if you think about it, botnets tend to propagate in two ways. The first way is like vulnerability exploitation. So they're actually going out looking for vulnerable hosts on the internet. Once they find one, they'll go ahead and try to exploit it. Now, what we see in analyzing botnet malware is that the vast majority of vulnerabilities they attempt to exploit have had patches out for them for the past, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, we're talking back in 2003. They're attempting to still exploit vulnerabilities that came out in, you know, 2003, 2004, 2005. If people were to patch their systems, or, you know, that wouldn't be an issue. Those vulnerabilities would no longer work for them. And the other way that we're seeing is just straight social engineering. If you remember before how I said I could send email as you to somebody within your address book.
Right.
Well, sending email as you adds an extra layer of confidence in the person receiving that message. So if I send something and say, hey, check out this attachment or check out this Word document, and you do that without thinking about it, and you just double-click on that, there's a chance that you're going to get exploited, or you're going to run a piece of code that could install a botnet on your machine, and now, you know, you're infected and you're owned.
Right, because I assume since, let's say in our case, I'm assuming the email came from you, and so I trust it.
Correct.
And proceed from there without realizing that I've just done myself some serious damage.
Right. Right, I mean, you have to, you know, in that particular case, you're probably wondering, well, why didn't my AV catch that? You know, there was malicious code in that email. You have to think of it in a way that attackers are in an arms race with the folks in the antivirus community. You know, what they'll do as an attacker is they will take a piece of code and they will try to obfuscate it in a way that antivirus doesn't detect it. There are sites out there, both public and private, where an attacker can upload his malicious code, get the AV results from 10, 20, 35 different AV engines. He may be only concerned with a couple of them, but as long as they pass those couple, he'll go out and submit or try to exploit with that piece of malicious code. Now, if the majority of the AVs detect his code or the attacker's code, what he'll do or what the attacker will do is attempt to obfuscate it in another manner so that those antivirus engines don't detect it.
Right, so effectively it flies under the radar screen and no one's the wiser.
Oh, exactly. And that's just you know, trying to obfuscate it. Let's just say that this is a brand new piece of malware. The AV antivirus community has never seen it. first off, they need to get a copy. You know, if their existing signatures or heuristics don't detect it, they need to get their hands on a copy of this malicious code. They need to analyze it, and they need to make a determination. Do I adjust an existing signature? Do I create a new signature? Do I adjust one of the heuristics to try to catch this? Once they make those changes, then they need to push those updates down to all of their end users.
Right.
And all that takes time, but all that time that that took, that botnet malware was now propagating, or just malware in general.
Right, and that's a reactive solution because you're analyzing it after the fact, correct?
That's correct.
How can business leaders in particular determine if botnet agents are on their computers or their organization's computers and networks, and if they do locate them, how can they get rid of them?
What they need to make sure that they have running is logging, and they need to have logging on all of their critical systems, all of their systems that may touch the internet or have internet activities pass through it. A primary example is, if you have a router, you want to make sure that you're logging NetFlow data from that router, and then you want to see if you can correlate that data with any of your other, say, your mail server or your DNS server, and see if you can correlate that data or even visualize that data, because there's a good chance that if there's a botnet or an infected host on your machine that's in a botnet, if you can quickly look at some NetFlow data, you have the potential of quickly seeing that there's a potential infection on your network. And generally what we see is once a computer is infected, it will attempt to try to scan for other computers. And looking at that in NetFlow data, visually, you'll be able to pick that out right away.
In other words, if there's an infected computer in my network and it's trying to scan other computers, I'm going to see a real uptick in the number of messages or the types of messages that computer is sending out, right?
You got it.
Okay.
Another thing that you might be able to look at doing is if your company has an authoritative DNS server, so if your machines are configured to ask your company's DNS server first how to resolve a DNS name or a host name, what you could do is you could set up some type of logging there where you're looking for anomalies or oddly looking domain names, and you can alert on them. You don't have to drop the request, but you can alert on them and then just manually review them. What we see with botnets, their DNS requests, the DNS names, the host names are quite odd and obvious. Seeing a list of today's DNS names that people looked at, minus the obvious ones, and you can create a baseline and just move those out of the way. But that's a pretty good indicator of a potential infection as well.
Okay, so taking that kind of preventive monitoring action before things get out of hand.
Yep.
Let's say that I have found this kind of activity through my logging or using an authoritative DNS kind of service. How can I get rid of these guys?
Well, your best bet is going to be to try to locate all the critical files on the system and pull them off or back them up, and then you're going to want to scan those files that you want to keep. And your best bet to ensure that your computer's clean, there's nothing else on there, is really to just wipe it and start from scratch. Rebuild the operating system and then load all of your applications or load all of your files back onto the system after you ensure that they're clean and they're not infected. And that's really the only way that you're going to know that your machine is no longer infected.
Okay, well that makes good sense. So basically doing a thorough house cleaning.
Yes.
So we've talked a little bit about this, but are there any actions that business leaders and other users can take to get in front of this a little bit to both prevent and detect further infection? I mean, you had mentioned, obviously, have your patches be up to date.
Sure. I mean, if you take the whole defense in depth approach, that's a great starting point. So, you want to raise awareness both with your, upper management, senior management, as well as your employees. You want to make them aware that this type of activity is occurring, and when this type of activity occurs, what are the potential losses that both the organization and the individual can suffer? Because not only can the organization suffer, but if the individual is going to a website and a keylogger is turned on, and that website just happens to be their personal bank account, well, now that information could be exfiltrated off the system, and the attacker could have their hands on that.
Mm-hmm.
provide education and training classes. They don't have to be anything, you know, in-depth, you know, maybe a lunch training, just to continue to keep this fresh into people's minds. You know, if they're doing the right thing at work, they're generally going to do the right thing at home. So, again, that just makes the Internet a better place for people to surf and visit. And as you already mentioned, you know, making sure all of your patches and your software are, you know, in place and up to date. And if you need to test before you apply a patch, just know that, you know, come up with a plan or have a plan ready so that you can secure that system, lock it down as tight as possible, so that until you get that patched, your services aren't down, but you're actively monitoring this to make sure that nobody's actually exploiting it.
Right, because it occurs to me as the attacker or the intruder community are looking for vulnerable machines, if my machine is well patched, up to date, securely configured, they're going to go somewhere else, right?
Sure. Sure. I mean, that's the beauty of botnets. You know, once a botnet logs into whatever command and control mechanism that's in place, and as I mentioned before, IRC is one, HTTP is another. You know, these things, you know, go over port 80 TCP. So you know, you got to filter both inbound and outbound requests. And then you have the infamous, you know, peer-to-peer malware, such as the Stormworm, which operated, you know, on what appeared to be an e-donkey peer-to-peer traffic. So you need to watch that, because when these things log into their command and control server, if the command is to scan for a particular vulnerability, you know, they'll continue to scan for as long as they're programmed to, and that generally can mean hours, days, weeks, whatever. So as soon as a machine is compromised, they log into this IRC server. Next thing you know, they're out scanning the entire internet, whether they start with your network or somewhere else. They're just scanning away.
Right, so one of the best preventative measures is to make sure that they don't stop at my computer in the first place, right?
Right, right. And again, if you're raising awareness and providing education to your employees, you know, the chances that they're going to get infected at work are slimmer, and the chances they're going to be infected at home are slimmer as well.
Okay, well, so if I do get in trouble, are there certain organizations I can contact, and where are some good places to learn more about this?
Well, the first thing you want to make sure that you have contact with or relations with is your upstream internet service provider. You want to make sure you want to know who to call and when to call before you actually have a problem. Because when you have a problem, the last thing you want to do is fumble around and be like, oh man, where is this number? Who do I call? What line? Because you know, the important thing is time. You know, if a machine on your network has been instructed to perform a DDoS against another company, you know, you're going to want to get that shut down. Or if there's a DDoS against you, you know, you're going to make sure you get that shut down, and your ISP is going to be your best friend in that case.
Okay.
Knowing where to submit malicious code. So let's say you found botnet malware in your machine. Well, now what do you do with it? Because the antivirus companies that you have in your network, they don't detect it, but you know something's fishy, something is going on with that code. So, you know, where do you send this? What do you do? You know, knowing where to do with that information, again, it's all about time. You know, another thing is, I'm not aware of any specific companies, but, you know, if you don't have an in-house shop, again, you're going to want to, you know, look externally, and you're going to want to do that before you get into a crisis, because, again, it's all about time. You know, in a time of a crisis, you want to make sure you have a game plan already set, or at least something flexible that allows you to move around, but, you know, just some milestones to make sure that you hit them.
Right. So, again, another good preventative measure is to have these kind of incident response contacts and procedures in place so that you can use them when you need them.
Exactly. Being prepared ahead of time is going to save you a lot of time in the long run.
So do you have some sources you'd recommend where our listeners can learn more about botnets?
Sure. If you visit www.cert.org, there's a keyword search. You can search for botnets, spyware, and phishing. www.us-cert.gov has some information for various audiences, technical, non-technical, the sysadmin. They also have a current activity section that highlights some of the big things that's going on the Internet. HoneyNet website, which is www.honeynet.org, has some great papers in a series titled Know Your Enemy, where they try to highlight some of the big things like, you know, botnets and phishing and such. And then you can find some general situational awareness if you monitor, you know, popular blog sites like WebSense or Sunbelt. Arbor has a Atlas dashboard, which gives you a general summary of what's going on. And the SANS diary is more like a current activity as well. So those are some good resources to check out just to try to grasp what's going on a, you know, daily or weekly basis.
Well, Nick, this has been very insightful and educational. I've learned a lot just in the short time we've been talking, and I know you've passed on lots of good comments and ideas to our listeners, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.